Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Cantilinguist once again. Back here, we are talking today with Luke. He is a wonderful activist. He's down in Alabama right now. He's done some wonderful stuff with Opie's Law. He talked to me yesterday at about 11:30. He also does activism with PTSD as well as helping out with the homeless. We are the Cantilinguist. I am Alex Mandelberg. Here with me, as always, the awesome April O'Connor.
Hello, Crab Diving Network, hosting us.
And saying hello to Luke. How you doing, Luke?
Not bad. How are you, folks?
We're doing good out here. We're doing all right. So there were a lot of things. I talked to Luke yesterday, and one of the interesting things that you brought up that I was really looking forward to talking to you about is you do a lot of activism for industrial hemp.
Exactly. Exactly. Yes. Because you have to have industrial to have medicinal. And I always say this, and then I say right after this sentence, when it's ready, recreational will fall.
Okay.
But you have to have the industrial hemp, I feel, to help with the economy, to help bring jobs back to these places that are losing that money yearly for families that have left, such as Tennessee. We all know that they just, March 16th, nullified the government for industrial hemp.
Well,
go ahead.
Well, my question is, how do you feel about where does industrial hemp also come up with, say, private growers? I mean, do you believe in lieu of or in addition to?
I believe that it needs to be just a flat out playing field. Let everybody start, because what you're finding is the industrial hemp is going to be just like cannabis, the industry. The people with the big pockets are going to be able to buy their way in and screw the grassroots mom and pop people that such I represent, you know, the grassroots.
Right. They buy up all the property, all the land. They're buying up all the land is what I'm noticing.
Yeah. I mean, I remember I heard a story about the guy up in Mendocino, I believe it was, who was a public official who, while he was in office, was buying up a bunch of commercial land and then said that you could only grow marijuana on commercial land that he owned all of.
And, charging an exorbitant amount for it.
Right. And I don't respect that idea, and I don't think it's a good idea, because big corporations, big farm have already done enough damage, I think.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you got these mom-and-pop stores all over the country. This is my 32nd state I've been to in 13 months. And I don't talk to big corporations. I don't talk to somebody who's I'm talking to the mom and pops. I'm talking to the grassroots industries. I'm talking about the four brothers that are sitting on the same land that their granddaddy had, that they're just eager to start growing hemp because they know the truth about it.
Mm-hmm.
They know they would much. Good example. I was in Jackson County, Tennessee a few months ago. I met with a lumber company. What was sad was for the president of this company to say he did not want to be knocking on his neighbor's doors knowing that they're in need of money to cut their trees down one time. Because that's all you're going to do it is one time.
Yeah.
Because the next 90 years to do it again, we won't be around.
Right. And you can grow hemp for paper in a season.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very, very, it's a quick growing crop. It's a short turnaround. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's really, and it's useful as hell.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, the wolf pack that I've been carrying around the country with me, that's made out of sativa hemp. Now, you know, you got all these grassroots people wanting to be part of this revolution, this movement to make the world a better place. You know, right now you can't even get hemp seeds in the U.S. as far as I'm understanding. You got to get them from Canada or somewhere else.
Right, or the hemp oil products like Bluebird or whatever.
Yeah,
right now that's something too. That on top of all of this going on, the education is the big thing. Mm-hmm. The awareness is the big thing, because I've also said this, and this is it's proven. Hemp CBDs, which the extract, the hemp oil, hemp is a nutritional factor.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you use hemp seeds, and you have hemp dogs. You have this.
You have hemp cars.
What's that?
Hemp cars now. They're trying to get cars that could run
cars.
Off of hemp
Look
oil.
At Lotus. Just came out with a car made out of hemp.
Yeah.
You can do anything with hemp. I mean, you can literally to self-sustain our own country to where we're not outsourcing as much as we are with just hemp.
Mm-hmm. Ford made a car out of hemp before. I mean, yeah, excluding the metal portions.
And that's what people need to understand. You know, you got all these, a lot of these states right now that are in the industrial hemp boom. Let's do this. Let's do that. Well, they're thinking, and on these bills, they're putting CBD extracts from hemp. Well, that's just fine and dandy if you want to puff on a vape that's going to surpass your nutritional value.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's the oil from cannabis, the 710, that creates the 1130 life.
Yes.
You know, it's the, ooh, I just that's got goosebumps. The cure. Now, for me, I use cannabis for my PTSD, and I use just a flower form. And thank
CBD
I'm
form?
So grateful and so blessed by Heather Lawless and Matt Gordon out in Washington for giving the world the Opie's Law strain. And that's, you know, that's what I use for my PTSD.
Opie's Law strain.
Yeah, would you explain the Opie's Law strain? Because you told me a little bit about it, but April hadn't heard about it.
Explain the Opie's Law. I haven't learned, I don't know a lot about it. And I'd like our listeners to know, too.
Opie's Law is a common law idea, just like the Amish, but for the seed. Think about this. Those the Amish that are here in this country and other countries and all around the world, they live by a set of rules that were established by them as a community called common law.
Yes.
They get in their buggy and they go. They teach their children their own way of school. They're fine with it. Those are common laws. Those are what the Amish communities have set forth, said here. Here's what's going to happen.
Passing on their traditions.
Do we have any naysayers? No, you all agree? Great, that's what's happening. Well, Opie's Law is just that, but it's for the seed, regardless if it's industrial hemp or medicinal cannabis.
Mm-hmm.
We should all have this right. You know,
absolutely.
Our constitutional right to say we can freely and solely choose our type of treatment, regardless if it's conventional, which is the big farmers that kill you, or non-conventional, which is this beautiful, beautiful plant. I mean, I will be 40 years old Christmas Eve. I didn't have my life handed back to me until I was 38 by Heather Lawless and Matt Gordon.
Now, had you not used marijuana at all up to that point when you turned 38?
I had used it, but I thought I was using it recreationally.
No, see, right. I understand that because I always thought I was using it recreationally. And I told you the story yesterday when we were on the phone that one day my doctor said, oh, by the way, you didn't realize, but you'd been treating yourself for 4 years for a condition you didn't know you had, and you'd been treating yourself very well. And
right. Well, that's because it is. And I've also said this, too. Cannabis is not for everybody, but hemp is. Because I don't know. It's hard. I just know from the people. I've met a lot of people in 13 months all across this country.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, cannabis is not for everybody.
No, sometimes they can't handle the THC.
Go ahead.
A lot of people say sometimes you can't that some people can't handle the THC, and that's understandable. I've seen people.
And that's understandable. Yeah. Yes, it is. And I completely agree. I mean, when we live in a society that every 30 minutes there's a new strain popping up.
Mm-hmm.
Every 6 months there's a new cannabis cup because people are trying to, that's the trademark for your strain. And that's why right now the Opie's Law strain is not available to the public because I guess a cup, you trademark your strain so nobody else can take it. And this Opie's Law and this Opie's Law strain and Heather Lawless, I mean, she, wow, the purple diesel that is the phenotype for the Opie's Law strain, you know, it's a high THC with a low CBD. But then again, it works for me.
Yeah.
What works for me may not work for this guy over here.
Yeah.
That's no, that was, I experienced the exact same thing when I was learning to treat myself, was that if it was the heavy CBDs, I would find myself just going to sleep and it wasn't helping with my stomach and it wasn't helping with the hyperactivity and all of that. So the THC is actually what helps me, but I have a lot of friends. I have one friend who has arthritis that he picks up a 25-to-1 CBD to THC ratio tincture that it's almost no THC in it, and that's what he uses to treat himself. So there's absolutely
exactly.
There's a CBD only.
I wanted to talk for a quick moment. I'm an activist for everything. And currently, I've been working on the homelessness here in Alabama and all across the world. You know, we're very susceptible to put a label on anything. if we can put a label on it and let society ride through with the labels, then that's fine. Homelessness, good example. We think, most majority of the people think of homelessness as the bum that fell asleep where he passed out. Now, I've been actually living as a homeless person for the past 14 days here in Alabama area, living at these tent cities and doing this. The other day, I was at a tent city. Now, we think of a bum and we think, oh, they're drunk, that's why they can't do nothing, la-da-da. Here's what happened to me. And I had to check myself to make sure I didn't shit on myself because I couldn't believe what I just seen. What I seen was four less fortunate people all anteing their money together. Now, because of the labels that were placed upon these people as I was growing up, I'm thinking, as I'm seeing this, these guys are all trying to ante up to get a six-pack.
Yeah, well, that's probably
what
I would have thought, too.
Guess what they were anteing up their money for?
Food?
To go and get some herb.
Yeah, that's what I was going to guess.
Fuck me right up.
Wow.
Completely set me back because that's something, again, when you look at some of these homeless people, believe it or not, they're not all drinking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're not all necessarily doing drugs.
Very strongly that, you know, you give them a joint, especially our vets coming home, you know, a PTSD, shell shock, however you want to put it. Do you know every 7 minutes? No, how'd that go? Every 7 minutes, somebody, a vet loses their life by suicide.
Yeah.
Listen, I told you yesterday, I have a few friends who suffer from PTSD who did serve. And one of them in particular did start using marijuana, and that was really honestly what got his life back together was the fact that he could calm down. Because I remember, I mean, he used to scream in his sleep. He would just flip out of nowhere. And we always wondered why he hated leaving his apartment. And then we realized, I was like, oh, he's suffering from PTSD and his apartment is his safe zone. And the only way that he would feel comfortable to even leave his apartment, which it wasn't even his apartment, it was his dad's apartment, was the only way he felt safe to leave was if we smoked a joint there.
Right.
And he'd go, okay, we can go out and do something and he would be fine. And then – but yeah, it's – especially for something like that, the ability to calm yourself.
This is the most at these 13 months for me since I started using cannabis on a as a medicinal, not a recreational. I up until 13 months ago, I could not even hold a job at a freaking McDonald's longer than a month. Because with PTSD, you have some anger issues built up, and it's back and forth. You don't feel safe. There's triggers that aren't like any others.
Do you smoke? Particularly, or do you consume edibles as well?
What's that?
Do you consume edibles, or
smoke? In 13 months, I've done the edibles, I've done the dabs, I've done the wax, I've done the flower, I've done,
what works best for you?
I myself, I'm a fan of the flower.
Right.
A man after my own heart. I love you.
I am a flower man, and again, like the numbers say, 420 is flower. 710 is oil. That's what cures cancer. And when you add those two numbers together, my friends, you get 1130 life. So I'm a very passionate, I love my flower. However, that goes right back to the same tool. Not everybody can use cannabis as a medicine the same way. The guy that, like, I'm using my flower, this guy may have the same PTSD in the same situation, but he feels better eating it.
Yeah.
This guy over here prefers to do a 12-gram dab, and he's fine.
My stepdad was in Vietnam, and I let him try an edible, and it did not. He was, you know,
didn't agree with him.
He was like, I wanted to blow my brains out. Is his quote, because it brought too much for him.
I was a judge for an edible contest in Colorado with AJ Hashman when I was out there. Now, you know, I ate 10 whole cookies. I didn't realize I was supposed to take a bite and then put the cookie down and do.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
I didn't know this. The only thing I did learn was that to AJ Hashman, I'm the first person that's ever eaten that much cannabis at one time and got up and did some dabs before I went to the house.
Right.
Wow.
So it's a different for each person.
Because I want to be able to try to, like, get him to try it again, but I feel like I might have ruined it for him with this first experience. I mean, it was a 420 bar, but he just had a piece. But that's really, it's very.
They're pretty strong. They're very, very potent.
You know, and I don't.
And also, edibles affect you very different than. Smoking flowers does, which affects you very different than smoking oils will affect you. They all affect you different ways. So
they all affect us differently because what's the one thing we all have is our endocannabinoid system. Mm-hmm. And those receptors react differently per person. That's why thoughts are so different amongst this world. That's why opinions are so different amongst this world. Because we all do have the endocannabinoid system, yes. But they're all different in a way, how they recept the things.
Yeah, our biochemistry.
Like the guy
that's
taking face blows in the boxing ring is not going to be the same guy that's running a daycare center. That's for damn sure.
Right.
You know?
No, it's well put, for sure. Wow.
You don't think we're going to have Mike Tyson's daycare? I don't know. Mike Tyson. Hey, listen, drop your children off. We'll have a great time. I swear I won't bite the ears off. It'll be great.
Right, exactly. You know, that's not the same guy that you want to run the daycare. And he wouldn't want to because, again, he's probably going to eat the little people.
That's right. He did threaten to eat Lennox Lewis's children, didn't he? I'm going to eat your children. Yeah, it was scary human being.
And now he's coming out with a cartoon.
And what I'm noticing across the country, across the nation, is what I'm learning is, and we talked about this last night, is how this education and awareness is so important. Because the people that don't know the truth, it's not because they don't want to learn the truth. It's just their access to learn it is not there. Somebody asked me a long time ago why I'm not sitting in a state with a medical card having my Opie's Law strain being just fine. Well, because I feel like that's just a jackass move right there. Because I'm not that selfish. I don't feel that I should be able to enjoy legally what all these other people in these other states can also be enjoying. And that's why I come to these states and come to the... I came straight to the Bible Belt on this one. I sure did.
You're in Alabama. I mean, wow.
Yeah. Can you tell us what was the...
You ought to Google that, Iron City. I put together and hosted the very first Tennessee-Alabama Hemp Awareness Festival for Opie's Law.
And apparently no arrests were made.
Or arrested. You know? And then when you bring this back to the big picture, just like this group I've been working, I don't know, this group that I know in Huntsville, Operation Stand Down for Vets, you know, if there were more people and more groups that were more interested in trying to empower and encourage, even in the movement, even in the industry of industrial hemp or medicinal cannabis, I think we would be a lot further.
I'm really curious in all of your journeying, what's been the most and least receptive states that you have visited in your trips?
The most receptive? Or?
Both. You know, what was the least receptive, you know, that a state was to this, and what was the most receptive? I'm sure Washington, being the best example, most receptive.
I can answer this question. To all the states I've been to, I've never felt like it was not a conversation welcome.
Wow.
If that makes any sense.
No, that makes perfect sense.
It's a beautiful thing.
As an activist, I've been came across law enforcement a few different times.
Mm-hmm.
As a homeless person that came across law enforcement, was completely different. If that makes any sense, I felt threatened the very first time I came across for a homeless activist, not a cannabis activist.
Okay.
And it doesn't matter who you are, where you're from. You don't have to be using this medicine to know the truth and to understand and respect the truth. A lot of these people cannot publicly come out and say this, though, because their fear of their job, their fear of their community, their fear of something. That's the stigma I try to break, because it is okay to walk out your front door and talk to that vet who fought for your ass to be free in the first place to help understand him, and then to talk about cannabis openly and freely. It's you know, I'm very surprised. I actually talked to a city official today here in Huntsville. And do you know what he told me on both the homeless level and the cannabis?
What was that?
Well, we need to just find a spot to put these people with their tents, hand them their bag of medicine, and leave them the hell alone.
Wow.
Wow.
I mean, that's certainly, it's not where we want it to be, but it's certainly progress from where it was even 10, 15 years ago, where it was.
Oh, definitely.
They're all druggies, and marijuana is a drug. Yeah,
right.
That's what I remember it being a decade
with
ago.
With the study, I have successfully completed a study federally for PTSD and cannabis out of Indiana. Because of what happened, I went to my therapist for my PTSD and my depression, and I said to him, I said, man, these pills have got me all sick. I'm not right. Let me try my way, and let me show you. And we both agreed. We would do this study through the federal clinic with his federal paycheck, but I would have to go elsewhere to do it because Indiana is not legal at the moment, at the time we started this. And, okay, so I told him I was going back to Washington. I just happened to stop in the 20-some states before I got there.
You're taking the scenic route to Washington, are you?
Well, you know, because I don't want to shatter too many stereotypes of a stoner being confused and getting sidetracked like we talk about.
No, you had a mission.
Yeah.
It took me a little bit to get back there, and by the time I got back, I just happened to have been through so many states that we forgot what the main purpose of what state I was supposed to be sitting in, why this occurred. And now, on top of the study, with his paper he released to me, that is on my page, it's on my Facebook page, I believe it's on my web pages too.
By the way, you might want to give us those web pages in case our listeners want to check those out, please.
Please.
Opieslaw.us and wheresopie.com.
All right. We're going to make sure, we'll make sure to post those up on our website as well, but yeah, go on, please.
And, so by him writing this concluded study and explaining that it's been cannabis that has put me to this, not a pharmaceutical, was a big thing. Because the one question we have never been asked, I have not been, and as far as I know, he hasn't been thrown under the ethics committee bus or arrested, neither have I, is that it was accepted because times are changing. You know, it's not taboo to talk about cannabis anymore. I think it's taboo not to talk about cannabis. And I think it's taboo to be ignorant enough to think that there is no medicinal properties to this beautiful plant.
It certainly seems like that would be an ignorant thought at this point. I think the evidence has certainly been there enough that this is a plant that could have a lot of medical benefits for people. And, you know,
he's not there no more.
Can you not hear me?
I'm hearing you. I'm hearing you. I'm sorry. I just got an update about somebody I've been trying to help out down here in Huntsville.
No problem. I understand. You seemed, if nothing else, I've been so shocked at how much it seems like you've been able to do in just these short 13 months that, I mean, that's what I really wanted to, that was what was most curious for me when I was hearing your story was, to hear that you were someone who only became a medical user so recently and how quickly it seemed to just envelop who you were, that you were like, well, I didn't, your eyes were opened in such a massive way. It really is.
Because when me and my therapist agreed to do this and I drove to Washington, I put my pharmaceuticals, I went completely cold turkey, and I knew that I could possibly well have hung myself by doing so. Because, again, they tell you, oh, you can't quit lithium cold turkey. You'll kill yourself. Well, no. If I keep taking the freaking lithium, I'm going to kill myself. So I wanted to do something as an individual, and I had this passion and this drive to do so that I didn't care what it was going to take. I didn't care. I mean, I have already, my third marriage was ruined. I just came home and caught her in bed with another man. So I don't have nothing else to lose. So I've had my life given back to me by this beautiful plant. And I was going to tell anybody who would listen. And that's where this journey began in Newark, Ohio. And look at 32 states, 13 months. it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that you don't need some huge-ass bank account to raise an awareness. You don't need some huge-ass bank account in education to educate people on the truth. Because I am a living example of what cannabis can do with mental health. Because up until these 13 months, the longest thing I've kept in bat was a court case for assault and battery.
Oh, wow.
Jeez. And yeah, I mean, listen, yeah. that's one of the hard things I think that most people wouldn't even realize is that, you know, somebody with PTSD to be on the road outside of what is defined as your comfort zone for 13 exactly. months in 32 different states and to have not had an episode where you broke out or flipped out.
Well, I've gotten emotional a couple – the emotions have gotten to me a couple times. There's YouTube. You can find me on YouTube and check out some. I've had a couple emotional breakdowns.
What's the name of your YouTube page? Tennessee.
What's the name of your YouTube page?
What's that? It's Luke Weaving on YouTube, I guess. I don't know. I do everything off my telephone, my smartphone. I don't use a laptop. I don't use a iPod or iPad or not. Like, everything's done off my phone. My videos, my pictures, everything. Because what I also wanted to do was change stigma of mental health. I am just an individual with an idea. And look how far it's gotten because of my passion and my drive. I don't do this for notoriety. I haven't made no money in 13 months. And for some God reason, I don't even know how my phone's not been cut off yet. But it's happened for a reason. And I feel very strongly and I'm very spiritually connected with the universe, I feel. And we're all here for one reason or another. My position here is obviously a messenger to run around this beautiful country educating the ignorance to bring out the truth.
Well, and it's a beautiful thing that you're doing, man. I mean, I've been it's been a weird eye-opening experience because you and I were connected by Medicinal Mike yesterday.
Yes.
Who's with Nug Life Radio down in San Diego. And he's a great guy. He's been kind of helping me out, putting me in touch with a lot of people in the cannabis world. And it's amazing because he put me in touch with, I think I only got to talk to about three people yesterday. And another gentleman and a lady, and all three of you, just the story. It's so amazing how this plant and this cause and this everything about this, there's so many people taking so many different routes. But all of them come to the place of, we're not doing this to make money. We just want to help people because we discovered this plant has a way to help people. And people exactly. have been unjustly persecuted and prosecuted because of this plant. And other people are not receiving treatments that really could legitimately help them. I mean,
that's why I stand here in Alabama at the moment. Because until they have their rights right around with everybody else, I have no intentions of going to make a home in Washington where the Opie's Law strains from. Because too many people have done that. Too many people have left their communities and forgot about their communities. And that's where we need to change things. You know, stand for your fellow man. Stand for your fellow mankind. That one love. That's what I represent, you know. I mean, this is not just about you. It's not about me. It's not about them. It's about making the world a better place.
Absolutely.
Well, it's a beautiful message.
You were a soldier of war. Now you're a soldier of peace.
Well, I whatever title helps people sleep at night to do is, I, you know, and I said last night, like I was talking to you, I'm not everybody's favorite cup of tea. I've just learned what haters are very recently. I have a few of them.
That means you're doing the right thing.
But then again, with PTSD, when I think of haters, now the labels we have placed on PTSD mental health, you would almost kind of picture me running across the country swinging my putter that I so lovely used to swing before. But no, I stand loud and proud and embrace the moment because it makes me stronger. And I do know that if I don't have access to my medicine, that things change. Things change upstairs with me, with the mental health, with the depression. So I stay very uplifted and positive, and I don't ever say it's about me. I also started a pay-it-forward approach when I started this Opie's Law 13 months ago. And what that was people started helping out with bus tickets or a couch to sleep on or a meal to eat or this and that. And it's brought the grassroots community stronger together with the cannabis community. Because, again, it's all of us trying to make this change. And you have some of these people that are doing it just for a dollar and to be greedy and all this other stuff, and kudos to them. Karma will serve up another, because that's the other girl I flirt with. I say I'm married to cannabis and I flirt with karma. They do go hand in hand very well together. Mm-hmm. And when karma jumps out of my pocket, chances are somebody's going to have a bad evening.
Yeah.
And that's I the secret, you know. I just let it go and let the universe place me where it wants me. Because I sure the hell did never think in 1 year, I tell you, that I'd be sitting in Alabama trying to do this.
Yeah, that's
it. Didn't see that coming.
I have a friend from Alabama. I'd be excited to hear this.
I didn't, because, and what's funny is, I believe we had talked last night, how people warned me not to come to Alabama. But then again, I had the same warning when I got to Tennessee, too. And I'm
surprised that you would say, I mean, I won't lie. I was surprised when you said that you have been received very well everywhere you've gone for cannabis. I mean, it's not surprising that you would say that the receptions have been less so for homeless, because unfortunately that is it's proven to be an afterthought in this country.
And this is why I was so not aggressive, and don't take that, mistwist my words. This
passionate.
Is why I was so aggressive, passionate to come and represent the homelessness in Alabama. Because what I learned in 13 months is me coming into somebody's state, somebody's community, somebody's town, you respect where you're at and you respect them for their own playground. However, if you can come in and start to raise an awareness on one major issue that everybody agrees on, and you slowly approach cannabis into the conversation, industrial hemp into the conversation. Today, a great factor, I met somebody down here in Alabama with the tiny homes. These people knew who I was from the internet. But this lady here, we started talking, come to find out, we went to the same troubled teen center up in Michigan.
Oh, wow. Small world.
Wow.
Small world.
Small world, yes. And that's the funny thing, because I don't really ever stop and think about what I've already accomplished in 13 months, because it's not about me. But when you come into Huntsville, Alabama, and one of the biggest developers here, you're in their office having a conversation with about these tiny homes, and they're just excited to see you as you are to see them. That's the eye-opener right there.
Yeah. That's the goal. That's what you're aiming for, because that's what helps raise even more awareness when they're happy to receive you, because they want to spread the awareness as well.
Exactly. As an activist, I it's funny because just before I left Tennessee, I was getting my hair cut. And while I was getting my hair cut, I heard the lady go, and I thought, oh shit, I'm going to have a bald spot in my head. No, she realized who was sitting in her chair. Now I hadn't even been to this little part of Tennessee where I got my hair cut. And, you know, it was the greatest to see the hope and inspiration people have that they see me for. That's my drive, because once you got that hope and that inspiration back, somebody just lit a fire into your ass and now you're running. Because so many people have lost hope and lost the inspiration for what this plant is and the laws, that people lose hope and they stop fighting for it.
Now, listen, I think especially, you know, me and April both being in Los Angeles, I think sometimes a lot of us out here get blind to what's going on in the rest of the country, because we honestly have had it pretty good here. We've had a pretty stable medical system in place for nearly a decade now. I think in the last like 2 years, they've really gotten the dispensaries to the points where I think they're functioning very well. We don't have one on every corner, because that's not what we wanted. We didn't want them next to our schools. We didn't want them next to people's churches and people's temples.
Right.
You know, I understand all that.
I was in Hollywood recently doing a video, a rap video. So I got a chance to see some of California and how there is. And you're right. You don't see them like that, because, again, this medicine doesn't need to be advertised because of the truth. Yeah. That's why you see so many damn liquor stores, because you need people to buy it, because you need to kill them.
Yeah, it's, but we get so blind to it out here because I think we do have it so good that it's really, it is eye-opening, at least for me, to hear the way people in other states can be inspired by a movement like this that someone like you would be taking on to themselves. Because, like I said, out here, I really had no clue until recently. Like I was saying, when Mike put me in touch with all these people, I was talking to someone yesterday who's actually going to be coming into studio next month. Who was taking Canamoms and moving them with their children to states where they could treat their children who were
without being
persecuted, children who were, you know, sick with terminal diseases, and, you know, using this plant in order to just try and get some relief from the pain and the suffering. And it's all of these stories I just hear and I go, I had no clue. I really didn't understand that people were still even hesitant towards this. I thought everything was like where I lived and that it was all okay. Well, you know,
accessible.
we still say it's illegal, but come on.
Wink, wink.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. You know,
right. Well, now see, that's funny that you say that, because I won't say where or what state, but I will tell you right off the top, when you start dealing with grassroots people, let me just tell you, grassroots people have a lot more appreciation for this beautiful plant than most people do in Colorado, let's just say. Because I was surprised to find out how easy medicine came to me when I'm in these states. Then that's the crazy part, because you think that it's, okay, you're in the Bible Belt, and it's no. But let me tell you what, it was a lot better medicine than almost
comparable, really.
You know? Because
I remember a stint in a certain Bible Belt state where I had a very rough time. I'll say what it was. I was in Arkansas.
Oh, wow.
And it was
Arkansas.
Just,
oh, wow. That's a fun state. That was wow.
Yeah, it's a fun state. When I was in Arkansas, they still called weed dope. It was mostly sticks and seeds. Well, it was weird because it was actually easy to get. It was like one of those things where, like, everyone had it, but none of it was good. But nobody talked about it.
Right.
But nobody talked about it. And everybody – that was the weird thing. I was like, how is it that everybody has this, everyone smokes it, and yet all of you still call it evil, and all of you still call it dope, and all of you still speak like only evil people do this? But it's like, I know you all do this.
Right.
I know it.
We were talking last night how when I was in Tennessee, I just came back from South Park out in Colorado into Tennessee, and I asked who had a rig, because, you know, your dad's, of course, you got to have your rig. These people backed away from me like I had lost my fucking mind and went crazy, because they thought, to them, when you say rig, you're talking about a needle, your mouth, your arm. These people were like, you're not putting cannabis in your arm. I'm like, who said anything about putting it in my arm? Like, where's a rig? And they're like, we don't have syringes. I'm like,
not a syringe. Not a syringe.
Come back over here. Let me teach you something. And off you go with the education lesson, you know? But yeah, that is funny. And, but no matter where, and what's funny too is you get to some of these states and they're singing dope and they mean dope.
Yeah.
You say dope, they're like, oh, you smoke crack? Whoa, wait a minute. Hold on here. That's why I just flat out, you got some cannabis? You got some weed? Flat out, I'm not playing the guessing game of what you guys call it here. I'm just going to be flat out. In half of the world,
I am looking for marijuana.
So like, I need, you know, they
have any marijuana.
I use medication. So, yeah, it's funny, too, to see how different it is across the nation, you know?
Yeah, it's a. I still will always remember my first roommate that I had. Now, I am from an East Coast family, so to me, a pizza has always been referred to as a pie. You get a pie. And I was wanting to ask my roommate if he wanted to get some pizza for dinner, so I walked up to him. I'm like, hey, you want to go halves on a pie? And he's like, for dinner? I was like, yeah, a pie. And he goes, I want apple? I'm like, no, fucking pizza. What are you talking about here?
A pizza pie.
A pizza pie. Oh, man. So that was, I mean, listen, that, yeah, that, that, you don't, I hate playing those guessing games with people. Never know what they're talking about. anyways, listen, Luke, before you go, please give us your website information again so that we are able to share that with people.
It is opieslaw.us, all one word.
opieslaw.us. And also it was whereisopie.com, correct?
Yes, all one word, yes. And they can actually, what I do on my Facebook actually pops up on my webpage.
Oh, perfect.
Awesome.
So you don't even have to find me on Facebook to see what I'm doing on Facebook.
Nice. Perfect. Love it. Well, listen.
And then I'm everywhere else too, Instagram. I don't know.
Well, thank you so much.
Also, give the people the spelling of your last name, because I know it is a little bit difficult for people to spell, and I want them to be able to get in touch with you.
It is W-I-E, B as in boy, E-N-G-A.
Thank you so much.
The best way is just Opie's Law. I mean, you can find me through that, too. That's pretty simple. Just like Opie Taylor, O-P-P-I-E-S-L-A-W.
Thank you so much for all of the work you're doing. We really appreciate the time that you took to sit here and talk with us. Keep up the good work, man. And believe me, we will be in touch in the future. We want updates. We want to know what's going on. So thank you so much, Luke.
All right, my friends. You have a wonderful time, and I appreciate the invite to your show for today.
Thank you so much. You have a good one, man.
All right, and if you could send a link over to my Facebook page so people can listen to this later or whatever, if that would be great if you could.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we will absolutely make sure you get all those connections, sir.
Okay, thank you, my friend.
You have a good one, man.
All right, one love.
Bye. An interesting conversation with Luke. That was an interesting man. I blew my mind. We talked. That was not only a lot of information, but heavy information.
Very heavy information.
Very, very heavy. Not to mention we had to deal with a guard. My gardener missed being here 2 weeks in a row, still wanted me to pay him, and then shows up and starts using that windblower thing right next to the studio as we're recording.
Yeah. I snuck out and was like, could you just do it over there and just, you know, do this in a little while? And
so all of you wondering, like,
maybe in like 20 minutes or so. And he's like, oh no, I'd be done in 5 minutes. And I was like, okay, then skip that part.
Yeah, just skip it. Just it's okay.
It's fine.
The leaves can stay. They're all right.
It's, oh man.
Gosh. Mother, son of a, I swear they, and not to, here's the thing, I basically am only paying them to take out my garbage.
Yeah,
because let's be honest, the grass in my backyard, what grass,
right?
And the grass in my front yard kind of pretty much takes care of itself.
Yeah.
And then here they come again. They're blowing again. I swear to God.
Oh,
I'm
no.
gonna kill no I, you know what? Then 2 weeks in a row, they forgot to take out my garbage. So now I have to order a dumpster to get rid of, because I couldn't take out my Thanksgiving garbage. I still have bags out there from plates and stuff I threw away on Thanksgiving
because
they forgot to take out my garbage. Or no, one time they took out my garbage, but they didn't put it on the curb. They left it on top, and then somebody parked there. So the garbage people just drove on by and were like, well, fuck it. Sorry, we're not taking up your garbage.
It's fucking white people problems.
Darn it.
Oh, man.
Darn it to be a middle class Anglo white. I'm not Anglo-Saxon. I'm a Jew. I'm a Jew. I'm all Jewy Jew.
That was really fun though, because I think that a lot of people are more aware of PTSD and that the benefits from cannabis, because some people don't. I mean,
I need to take a big fat bong rip. I'm so apprehensive about that interview.
I know, it's good, and then it's great that. Even hemp is so powerful, especially down in those states. That used to be a major cash crop for them way, way back.
Well, what was most interesting about that was him telling me how going up in private farmers being like, I wish I could grow hemp.
Right.
It would be so much. And I get that. I really do. And I get logging companies going, I don't want to cut down these people's trees. That's all that. I mean, that's the only wood they have.
Mm-hmm.
And it's crazy. It's very, very, there's a lot of information to process.
Yeah,
it certainly was. And you've been looking up other interesting, you were just reading me a bunch of interesting facts about
hemp. I mean, there's a billion crazy awesome facts about
said,
him.
What was it? You said Betsy Ross's flag, the right. Declaration of Independence, the Constitution.
Yep.
All hemp.
Bibles, maps, charts, etc. in the U.S. and government archives. Even like Van Gogh's, Rembrandt's, Gainsborough paintings were done on hemp linen. Oldest records of farming go back like 5,000 years in China, although hemp industrialization actually was in Egypt as well. But in the States, that was like a lot of the first crops grown.
Yeah.
And like, especially in the Bible Belt states, like they're
well, tobacco and hemp were great cash crops for the U.S. when we were first starting, because with almost every crop, it comes into season, it grows, you pick it, and then you have about maybe, if you're lucky, 3 weeks mm-hmm. to get it to market before it spoils. Mm-hmm. Hemp and tobacco were the only plants that let them sit out. They're just going to get...
They're better with age.
Let them dry. Let them get old. Let them get crusty. Let them fall apart, because that's what we're looking for. Mm-hmm. We need it to be old and dry and crusty and all that. So for a country that was... all of our exports had to go on sea for, you know, about a month to get back to jolly old England or France or Spain or whatever. Yeah, tobacco, hemp, of course. It was the only crop that we could grow plenty of because we had more space than everyone else to grow it in.
Right.
And transport it because it wasn't going to spoil. Mm-hmm. So hemp just as much as tobacco built this country.
Right. The reason it's mostly illegal is because, well, you could make linen out of it, but then the cotton gin was invented. You've got the paper companies, and then you've got DuPont. So, because you could make paints from the oils. So you've got all these different companies that gain from making these, you know, hey, I'm going to build my empire around something that's bad for the environment. But hey, that's where I'm making my money. So why should I change my whole business structure, my whole business model, just so that, you know, instead of doing what's better for the environment?
Well, it's these weird decisions that the government seems to have made for us. It's corporations and money. Corporations and money is the only reason why the sugar industry is still as big as it is. I mean, we force feed sugar down people's throats.
Starch,
because our
corn,
government
corn,
has agreed
syrup.
That we will buy sugar at sometimes about 15 to 20 cents above
subsidies, yeah.
The world price of it per bag. I mean, we
same thing with corn syrups.
Yeah, same thing with corn syrups. We already have decided that we're going to pay more money for it, so we're going to have a surplus of it, and we're going to force feed it down everyone's throat because we have way too much of it and we pay way too much for it. So tough shit. Got to pass it off onto somebody. And there's always been wonderful substitutes, but this is definitely, you know, I was so much happier when I was just ignorant to the frickin' world. It was so much easier.
Right.
You know,
and then
the last few weeks have just been so, you know, I didn't know that racism really still existed in the modern world.
Yeah.
Until Barack Obama was elected. And I was like, oh, there's still racism.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. People still feel that.
You're growing up in Cali. I mean, it's different.
Yeah, no, I've been shaded. I was in East Coast and then West Coast. Like, I've only been coastal.
Yeah.
That's all I've ever been is the coast. I've never, you know, settled in anywhere, you know, middle states. And I did not. And here's the thing, even in California, there's racism that I've noticed ever since this happened. I mean, it exists, and now with what's been going on in the news lately
and all that stuff. It existed before Barack Obama.
It existed before him,
but
I didn't see
aware
it.
Of
I
it.
Didn't
yeah.
see it. That's what I'm saying. Like, I know it existed before, but I just didn't see it. And everything going on, it's so frustrating because all of it comes back to there's a solution, but it's almost too simple for us to just be like, oh, okay.
No, I mean, you know, there really are like these comic book style, movie style, like developer villains out there that want to like have all the money.
Yeah.
And like,
no.
Watch
the documentary 1%. If you don't know, if you've never heard of it, it was made by the grandson of the man who founded the Johnson & Johnson Corporation. So his grandson, obviously lots of money, decided to make – he made a documentary first. I forget what the first one was called. It's like Children of the Rich. But this one was more just about the disparaging – the difference between the 1% and everybody else. And it was just such this interesting look into it. But there was a dude in there, and he talks to the guy who owns Kinko's. And that's that dude you're talking about.
Yeah.
But he's just like, he goes, okay, so you have enough money that you can never work again and you would live the most lavish life in the world and still not run out of money. He's like, yeah. But do you want more? He's like, yeah, of course I want more. Of course.
Insatiable appetite for money.
Of course, no human being on earth would ever be satisfied with just $20 billion, you know, I don't think it was that, but $5 billion.
Like the LA fire, right? Did you read about the LA fire?
Yeah, I did.
There was a fire on Friday night, or technically Saturday morning, I think, right? About 1:32 in the morning, and it was the structure of a building going up by Jeff Palmer's, one of his big buildings there. He's pretty much like the downtown bad guy. When he built his Orsini on Cesar Chavez, there was one house that was left from the 1800s that they wanted to keep. They were actually going to move it away.
Yeah.
But his bulldozers accidentally backed into it.
Yeah. No,
you can't hear my air quotes, but they're up there.
Yeah. April O'Connor's throwing mad air quotes around that accidentally. She's just like, I wish you could see me saying, he's fucking lying. He's a liar.
But it's like, he's like the big mean developer from Captain Planet or
In the documentary 1%, he's sitting down with another son of, you know, one of these corporate giants, and he is in one of these brand new subsidized apartments in South Chicago, which has always been black and poor, and all of a sudden now super rich are taking these, you know, old broken down buildings, turning them into lofts. And they were sitting there talking to him, and he's going, well, you know, obviously me moving here is what causes urban gentrification. And, you know, and he starts talking about gentrification, and here's the thing. He says you only need three things to gentrify an area. And he says the three things, and you're going to think, oh, my God, that's terribly racist. Oh, my God, it's kind of true. He says the first thing you do is you close all the basketball courts.
Are you fucking serious?
Second thing you do is you open a big police station. Third thing you do, close all the schools but one. And that sounds terribly racist. And think about that and you go, well, shit, yeah, though, but when you do that to an area, whenever we've seen that done to an area, that area's gotten a lot whiter.
Yeah. Well,
so
they're putting people
it's not a good thing. I hate that that's the thing. Like, and when he's saying it, you're going, you're disgusting. How could you say these things? But when you look at it from the outside in, you got to go, well, shit, yeah, that is how they
that's
do
how
it,
how they
though.
Make money.
That
and
is
they can,
how they do
how
it.
How do they go from having, like, a, you know, of low rent property to making millions of dollars.
Yeah.
You have to
gentrify the area. And that, you know, it's like I said, it's very sick. It's disgusting that there's such a difference. But yeah, for anyone who's interested, check out that movie. I know it's on Netflix right now.
I want to see that.
1%. 1%. Yeah.
Well,
crazy
guys,
stuff.
This has been a heavy ride.
This has been a heavy episode. I know you're getting ready. You're going up to the Emerald Cup, huh?
I'm pretty excited about that. I went last year. It's going to be it's mostly for outdoor. You know, they do edibles and concentrates,
yeah,
but it's the outdoor cup.
The outdoor growing
cup. And it's been going on longer than any of the cups in California. So I'm excited about that, and I'll be making my way
around.
Who
are you going with?
I'm going with my friend.
With your friend?
With my friend.
You're going with your friend.
We're gonna, you know,
go be besties.
Go be besties.
You know, do each other's toenails and watch girly movies and eat ice cream.
It's a honeypot mission.
Oh, it's a honeypot mission. I see what it is.
Yeah, so medicated honey.
We should explain. We're talking about the medicated honey honeypot, because if you're thinking that's some kind of sexual innuendo, that would have been really awkward. They're like, oh, is April
really on the can of liquid? There should be no assumption there.
There should be no assumptions as to what Cantilinguist is talking about.
How about you? You got anything coming up?
I got PUI this weekend. That's about it. Okay. I did an interesting show last night with Ryan Taumo. It was a bunch of comics, and basically everyone in the bar was allowed to write down any movie on a piece of paper, throw it in a bucket, and you were only allowed to pull a name out of the bucket, read it, and when you're done with the movie, move on, and you have 7 minutes to get through as many movies as you can.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was kind of
quotes from it or something?
No, not quotes, just talking about it. Anything you want to talk about that movie.
Oh, nice.
At all. Whether it was your experience seeing it, whether it was cool whatever concept. You wanted it to be. It was kind of fun. I mean, I got terrible movies that I did a bunch of them. Well, I went up twice, actually. The first time I went up, it was just, I forget what it was, Boogie Nights and Super Mario Brothers. And I passed on because I was like, nobody wants to talk about this. Somebody put Last Tango in Paris in there. Geez. I was like, screw you. Nobody wants to talk about Last Tango in Paris. Who wants to talk about Last Tango in Paris?
So PUI Friday. I'm going to be at the House of Blues in Boston in the Foundation Room on the 16th.
Sunday the 16th. You're lucky lady, I mean, going Tuesday back to Boston. Have it yet?
It's gonna be wicked cold.
Wicked pissa cold.
I'm not looking forward.
You better bundle up.
I'm not looking forward to it. I better get my parka.
Get your windbreaker. it's gonna be chilly out.
Yeah.
It's gonna be wicked pissa cold.
It's gonna be wicked chilly. It's
gonna be wicked chilly. Oh gosh.
Guys,
I miss the East Coast.
It's been fun.
Bring me back a Dunkin' Donuts when you get back.
Oh my god.
Bring me back all the Dunkin' Donuts.
Done.
Well, for April O'Connor, this has been, I'm Alice Mandelbrot. This has been a fun one.
Crab Diamond Network. Thank you.
Crab Diamond Network, we love you. Have a good night. Woo!